doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case loving you. No pills, no.
Well, there's breaking news from the American Heart Association conference. It took place in the last couple of weeks, and Dr. Robert Carhart, our frequently returning cardiologist from University Hospital, is here to tell us all about them. Good morning, Dr. Carhart.
Good morning.
Were there any big blockbusters?
Actually, nothing that will turn the cardiology world on its ear, unlike previous studies. There were 23 late-breaking trials reported, and then, of course, hundreds of other trials, but nothing that will dramatically change the landscape within the next couple of months.
All right, well, let's talk quickly about what a trial is so our listeners and patients can understand why they need to pay attention.
Well, when we're talking about especially late-breaking trials, most of them are clinical trials. They're designed to test theories whether one drug is better than another or one treatment is better than another. And these are studies that patients volunteer to be enrolled in, mm-hmm. and are subjected to either taking the study drug, for example, or are monitored while they are on a pre-existing medication, and looking at outcomes to try to determine what's actually the best course of therapy for people with their conditions.
And there are actually many studies going on right here in Syracuse, aren't there?
Absolutely.
But none of the ones that were reported at this conference?
No.
Okay. Well, let's talk about some of the big ones, the ones that will affect our listeners most directly. Tell us about the first one.
Okay. Well, there was an interesting study that was actually presented on Wednesday at the conference that looked at the effect of cholesterol medications on your sleep habits. And essentially what they did is they took 1,000 people who didn't absolutely need to be on cholesterol medicines immediately. Mm-hmm. So they hadn't had a recent heart attack. And they separated them into three groups. One group received a cholesterol medicine that is soluble in fat.
Okay.
Crosses blood-brain barrier. So it actually can get into the brain tissues itself. Another group was placed on a similar cholesterol medicine that dissolves in water. So it doesn't cross the blood-brain barrier, so it tends not to deposit in brain tissue. Third group was placed on a sugar pill or a placebo.
Okay.
And they followed essentially their sleep habits for 6 months. And an interesting finding was that the patients that were put on the fat-soluble cholesterol-lowering agent actually had worse sleep habits.
Really?
Yes.
So, in other words, the medicine they're taking to lower their cholesterol is negatively affecting their sleep.
Absolutely.
Do we have names of what those drugs are?
Well, the two drugs used in the study, the fat-soluble cholesterol-lowering agent, was simvastatin.
Okay. And is there another name we would recognize?
The brand name was Zocor.
Okay.
Zocor has now gone generic, so it is now referred to in most of your pharmacies as simvastatin.
Mm-hmm.
The water-soluble cholesterol-lowering agent is actually what's called Pravacol, now Pravastatin is the generic name.
Okay. And so patients taking these drugs, if they're having problems with their sleep, you recommend what? They get back in touch with their cardiologist?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, if there is everything else been removed from the equation and mm-hmm. it comes down to this raises a question about choices of medications, especially in light of some other data that has come out.
All right. Now, was there any other relation? We had a listener who called and left a question for us, and she wanted to know if there was any relation to the statin drugs, sleep, and dementia. Was anything talked about that?
In this specific study, no, but there's actually been several other studies that have looked at the fact that cholesterol-lowering agents, at least some of them, may affect short-term memory.
Okay.
And decrease or loss of short-term memory is one of the early markers, if you will, for dementia.
I see.
Now, across the board, it is known that if you take a cholesterol-lowering medicine, your risk of developing dementia is lower than someone who does not. But that may have to do with the actual lowering of cholesterol. Now, what is being demonstrated is, at least on short-term memory, some of the cholesterol-lowering agents, and in fact, the one study that was recently in the news, also used simvastatin, which is the drug we were just talking about,
mm-hmm.
and it did seem to impact short-term memory.
Negatively. Okay, and so this listener, who I believe had heard this on another news report, really should be getting back in touch with her doctor.
Absolutely.
Right? If she has concerns.
The first suggestion is, if you're on a cholesterol medicine, there's probably a reason for it, and you shouldn't just stop it.
Okay.
But there are multiple other choices in terms of cholesterol medicines, some which are lipid-soluble that can cross blood-brain barriers, and some which do not.
So
and
there is real science behind all of it, isn't there?
Absolutely.
Right. Were there other studies of interest?
Yes, there were a couple others that I thought we could talk about briefly today.
Okay.
One actually has to do with a trial that was stopped in the spring of this year. There was a medication being developed that was designed specifically to raise your HDL or your good cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
And it is believed that the higher your good cholesterol is, the more protection you have from cardiac events.
Sure.
And interestingly, the trial was stopped very abruptly by the Safety Monitoring Board. And briefly, that is a panel of scientists separate from those conducting the research that review the data on a very frequent basis. And if they see a trend that the study may actually be causing harm, they have the right and the ability to stop the trial.
And they did in this case.
They absolutely did.
And why?
And what it turned out is that patients taking the active drug did indeed see their good cholesterol go up. And in fact, it went up by 70%.
It would sound like a good thing.
Absolutely. However, in the patients taking the active drug, they also ended up developing higher rates of death and higher rates of cardiac events.
Oh my gosh. So that really wasn't the help they thought it would be.
Absolutely not. And what this has done, and actually what was presented at the American Heart Association, was sort of the final analysis of that data to confirm actually what the Data Safety Monitoring Board had pointed out. And what it is now shining a light on is there may actually be subgroups of good cholesterol.
And so then, there's a good cholesterol and a better cholesterol? Well, a good HDL and a better HDL.
A good HDL and perhaps a bad HDL.
Oh my gosh. And then there's LDL too.
LDL too. And there may actually be a bad LDL and then a really bad LDL.
Okay. All right. But the point is now they're going to have to divide these all out and sort them out and figure out really which ones are beneficial.
Absolutely. And, right. And I think this also points out one of the benefits of clinical trials, which is that sometimes even negative results opens up new avenues of research.
Well, and that's a really good point. All right, any other studies?
Yeah, the last study we'll talk about this morning, which was kind of interesting, was taking a group of patients who have heart failure and actually separating that group into patients who were then taught and allowed to do yoga for exercise,
mm-hmm.
and those that were basically just treated as they were normally treated. And what they found is that the people that did the yoga actually had a subjective improvement in terms of markers of quality of life.
They felt better about
it. They felt better about their exercise, their mm-hmm. ability to do things. And objectively, markers of inflammation actually went down in the people that were doing the yoga. The important part of that is that high levels of inflammatory markers in heart failure correlates to an increased risk of death.
I see. So these people are doing yoga, and not only do they feel better about their world and about themselves, but there were real measurable results in their body systems.
Absolutely. They're treating themselves with what is not usually perceived as aggressive exercise.
I see. So they can go along in life knowing that they're probably better protected because they're doing yoga?
Absolutely.
So quality of life is not just they feel better, but they also feel better about their future.
Mm-hmm.
That's excellent. Well, Dr. Robert Carhart, thanks so much for coming by. It sounds like some interesting outcomes from the American Heart Association.
Absolutely.
Doctor, my eyes.
Well, yes, Thanksgiving is this week. Here it comes, families getting together, and of course, our big Thanksgiving dinners. Leftovers, the kickoff to eating season. Mary Henson, registered dietitian from University Hospital, is here with us in the studio this morning. Mary, help. We've got all this food in front of us. The eating season begins.
Yes, I don't know if it begins with Thanksgiving, though. I think it's really a year-round thing. It's become that we just eat all the time, and I think that the holiday season really begins with Halloween, and it kind of gets kicked into overdrive by Thanksgiving.
Well, you know, you may be right. I know that this year we are in a new neighborhood, and we had 8 pounds of candy that we got
Ooh.
Rid of. And of course, I was hoping some would be left over. Thankfully, none was left over. But I think you're right. It does start with Halloween, doesn't it?
Yeah, we kind of give ourselves this excuse to eat throughout the holiday season. I don't know if it's the Christmas music that conditions us that started the day after Halloween this year or what it is.
Maybe that's it. Well, you know, I don't know. I think I'm probably typical of most. I look at this season as this is my forgiveness time of the year. And then January 1st, I'm going to start my diet. Isn't that a good idea?
No, that's probably one of the worst mistakes you can make is to resolve to lose weight on New Year's day.
Really?
Because how long does a New Year's resolution really last? It's really a gateway, and it's an excuse to overeat throughout the holidays.
So don't make
that your New Year's resolution this year.
All right. Okay, so realistically, if we know that families are getting together, we have all those traditional recipes. You know, my sister makes one, my other sister makes another. We all get together in the same place. We look forward to them every year. Can't we just go ahead and enjoy it on Thanksgiving Day?
Yeah, I have to say yes to that. I really think that tradition takes takes the prime place on Thanksgiving Day. People really feel a connection to these recipes, and it's the one day of the year that you really do get to use them. So I do think that it should be allowed.
Good. Okay, that's a good start. And then leftovers?
Leftovers. This is where it gets tricky because, you know, it's not really just Thanksgiving Day. It's not the one day. It's the month before and the month afterwards that we keep doing this to ourselves. So, yeah, I think we really need to practice moderation.
Moderation. All right. So we're going to have all this great food on Thanksgiving Day. If I overeat, what am I supposed to do?
Well, exercise is key in this whole scenario as well. And I think that really, if you could exercise, maybe start a tradition of exercising in the morning, a turkey trot or something like that, that you can do with your family in the morning before Thanksgiving dinner. Uh-huh. And then even afterwards, go out for a walk, get outside, get away from the food.
I think that's a good idea. You know, as I said, we're in a new neighborhood, and it's a great place to walk, and there are families all over the place. I can kind of picture all of us getting up from the Thanksgiving table this year and maybe going out for a walk if the weather is good.
Yeah, or get people together for a game of football or something like that.
Sure. I think that's a great idea. What are some of the things that we can do at the dinner table? I mean, you know, granted, there's plenty of food, and it's right there in front of us. And I know you're going to tell me portion control, but what are some of those real tools we can use?
Oh, it's so hard. I just really don't need to overeat on Thanksgiving Day just because it's Thanksgiving Day. I really feel that way. You can eat the most delicious food, but you don't have to overeat it. And just taking a small taste of everything, you can enjoy that small taste of everything on the table as much as you could enjoy a huge portion of everything.
Very good. That's great advice. Well, Mary Henson from University Hospital, thanks so much. I hope you enjoy your Thanksgiving dinner as well as we do this year, too.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm psychologist Dr. Rich O'Neill with this week's Checkup from the Neck Up. How the Pilgrims Got It Backward, or Thanksgiving Happy. Remember that amazing winter about 10 years ago when we had a million days below zero? Biting winds, day after day of the white stuff, ice storms, the year the sun said, sayonara, see you in the next life? Well, one dark night back then, scraping my windshield with the snow whipping my face, I decided never to complain about summer heat again. I've more or less succeeded. When I want to whine and complain, I take a deep breath, wake up that memory, open up to feeling hot. I take the fork in the road toward gratitude for our seasons and for our body's incredible ability to adapt. Surprisingly, then, I usually enjoy the heat, and I'm happier in general. Not having to listen to my verbal pollution, the people around me seem cheerier too. Now, some recent research supports my little experiment. The researchers asked a bunch of people to write down, every day for 3 weeks, the things they felt grateful for. They asked another group to write every day too, but not about their gratitude. After 21 days, the latter folks were no more or less happy than before. But the gratitude group reported feeling much happier about their lives overall. So this Thanksgiving, I'm going to do an experiment, and I'm hoping you'll join me. When I raise my glass for my toast, instead of thinking about how I'm missing my favorite football team on the tube right then, or how annoying I find Uncle John when he drinks too much and talks too loud with his mouth full, I'm going to look each and every person in the eye and say one thing about why I'm grateful that person is in my life. And let's not leave you and me out. After all, we're pretty wonderful too, even if we do say so ourselves. I'm betting no matter what's cooking outside, the weather gets a little sunnier inside. At least, I know I'll be glad I'm not a turkey. Thanksgiving, happy. I'm psychologist Dr. Rich O'Neill. Thanks for listening.